Thanks for listening to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Crown Peak and Elastic Path, and hosted by me, James Gennicle Rogers. We bring you interviews with industry thought leaders and the C-suite of tech companies and leading brands, showcase e-com tech, and help you decide what's relevant to your business, and hopefully discover new solutions and new ideas or ways to do business. In return, all we ask is you tell people about the podcast and you share our social posts. And if you're new to the show, give us that rating on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you might be listening. So thanks, and we hope you enjoy our latest episodes. The topic today is Replatform's new headless stack on BigCommerce with Bloomreach. We're joined by MK and Building Supply. So I'll let Paul set up an intro, I guess, because he's previously connected to him. Over to you, Paul.
Great, yeah. So Craig and I met at a BigCommerce event in Austin. Must have been the year before last, so 2021. And although we didn't spend too much time together sober, Craig gave me a bit of an overview on his project that he was doing at the time with BigCommerce and migrating the MKM stack over to BigCommerce and a number of other vendors, which I found really interesting. So I asked him to join us. But Craig, maybe if you give us a little bit of an intro to you as well, your background, and then also MKM, and then I'll ask the first question.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, so I'm Craig McLaren. I am head of digital in MKM, been in the company just over 2.5 years now. So I joined June 2021. So my background, mainly, I mean, I've worked for, I think I'm on my 30th year working now. You maybe all think I started when I was 12, but not quite. So I kind of started as a developer way back, kind of moved into project program management, then got into kind of e-commerce re-platform projects with Heineken, and did a number of them kind of over 7 years. So taking business to business online for kind of the first time. So that was my kind of first foray into e-commerce, and I really, really loved it because I could actually relate to the product, and everybody had an opinion on e-commerce because we all use it in our everyday lives. So the opportunity came along with MKM, with Andy. I'd worked with Andy at Heineken before, and we were basically doing a re-platform, basically ground up. So the opportunity to do that and actually have a fixed timeline, because it was a burning platform, we'll probably come on to some of that later on, actually was really appealing to me, because it gave us real kind of focus, and I really loved that kind of Andy's ideas and the strategy. So I took the decision to leave actually Sky, who I was with for a couple of years, doing agile transformation, to kind of get more hands-on and deliver, you know, a composable commerce solution, which I had never done before, but I really, really wanted to crack it. So that's me.
Great. And I guess we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but can you just talk us through, like, I guess, why you were replatforming, what you were migrating away from, and what the kind of overarching goals were for the project?
Yeah, so I think to even describe what we're migrating away from is quite challenging, actually, because it was built on, I think it was about 11 years worth of different solutions. But there was certainly an Epi server back end, and we had a Mobify kind of front end, and a lot of the products were kind of going end of life. Mobify was, we'd have to totally re-platform. And I think based on the infrastructure that we had in a lot of our back end, we decided that it would be better and more efficient to strip it out and basically start again. So it was a kind of old monolithic setup, various projects that hadn't quite made it over the line, but had made it over in the kind of last one. But it basically had about a year and 2 months to go before it went end of life. And that was mainly the kind of the Mobify side of stuff.
So can you talk us through your selection process? We showcase loads of different technology at this podcast. And I think people listening are always interested in how you end up with the underlying e-commerce platform. You ended up with BigCommerce. And of course, there's lots of other options in B2B. So what was that selection process, and what was the decision criteria that took you to BC?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think I suppose the decision and the process and the strategy probably started earlier in the year, even before I had joined. But I was speaking to Andy even in the March before I joined in the June. But I think we're fairly set on going for a composable commerce app and going for kind of best in breed. And I think Andy and a few others already had some good ideas on probably some of the tech and the companies we would maybe consider using. So we actually ended up going into an RFP process. And a very structured process. We defined all our requirements of what we needed, and we hit it from a, you'll hear this word all the time, I suppose, MVP perspective. We know we had a year to do it. So what we didn't want to do was complicate it and add lots of bells and whistles onto the kind of existing functionality. We did a few things, but we wanted to keep it very, very similar functionality-wise, but we just wanted it to work and be quicker and be able to check out. The previous system had a lot of kind of errors. Things would fall down between systems and sometimes branches wouldn't even receive the orders. So we basically wanted something that did some basic e-commerce functionality, but best in breed. So we kind of looked at various platforms. We'd made a decision that we wanted to go with a digital experience platform technology provider. So someone like a Bloomreach or Amplience or others. So we looked at a few. We landed on Bloomreach because we felt it gave us a lot of the functionality we needed, and it also gave us our digital marketing platform for all our SMSAs and email marketing and so on. So it meant we had one system we could actually join all the data together, and that was quite important for us looking ahead to the future. We wanted a solid kind of back end, or we looked at it as a back end kind of functionality. So all your ordering and checkout functionality, wanted a really good solid system. So we looked at commerce tools, we looked at BigCommerce, and we looked at a few others, and we were impressed with quite a lot over the market. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure we wanted to go full in with one of the real large corporations, and we didn't want to go in too small. And we felt kind of BigCommerce fitted our profile as well as a kind of emerging company, a wee bit disruptive as NKM are in our industry, and Bloomreach as well. And it's like anything, when you meet your people, you're trying to work out if they've got similar cultures to you and it's going to work. So culture's quite hard to define, but we looked at that with the people that we met, and we insisted that we met the people we would work with. It wasn't just a sales team that turned up and then disappeared and then a whole set of different people came. We actually met the people we would work with, and that was important to us as part of the selection process. So that was Bloomreach and BigCommerce. And View Storefront actually came to the table just a little bit later in the process. And that came through, obviously, we were looking at a system integrator as part of this to help us do this because we didn't have our full internal dev team. At that point, we had product ownership, we had lead UX, we had a business analyst, we had a scrum master. So we started to bring in the kind of framework of a team, but we never had anybody to actually do the coding. But we wanted to work with a provider, a system integrator, a partner, to help us pull it all together and build it. So as part of the selection process, we looked at technology platform providers, and we also looked at system integrators that were partners of these companies. And then we pulled it all together, did all the commercial analysis, did all our scoring, very kind of individual scoring, pulling it all together, challenging each other on all our scoring. So we did it in a kind of proper rigid process. And we wanted to do it properly. So that was it. It was basically an RFP process. Meet the vendors, meet the partners, meet the people. And then another approach, probably fast forward slightly, the way we were able to structure commercial deals allowed us some flexibility that we spent the first 6 to 8 weeks of the project doing proof of concepts and getting all the requirements flushed out to make sure at the end of that phase, everybody understood each other. And that the three partners, including View Storefront, because the way that was kind of presented is that that would get us quicker to market. So at the end of a kind of proof of concept and discovery phase, we made the decision to progress forward into kind of an agile approach and using sprints. So that was our approach. And, you know, from June to the end of kind of July into August, we made our decisions and we basically kicked off the project in September. And basically from the September to the following August, the 31st of August, to I think 5:36 in the evening, we went live.
Crown Peak, enabling organisations to build meaningful digital experiences for everyone, everywhere. Engage your customers with our content management system, reach your entire audience with our digital accessibility and quality tools, and grow your brand with our product discovery solution. Find out more at crownpeak.com.
I think sometimes it's quite nice. You said about you had just over a year before end of life. Having a fixed time frame, I think, can be really helpful with scoping, because often when I work with quite a few businesses where they don't have a commercial need to be live on any particular day, and trying to get stakeholders to focus on what's important becomes harder because it's like, oh yeah, but we can do more. And now you get this endless creep. and people not focusing on what's critical for business. So did you find that having that data in mind helped sharpen you in terms of project definition and helped to manage?
Yeah, totally. To be honest, totally agree. Now, I kind of mean this slightly flippantly, but would I have taken the job if I didn't have a fixed timeline? I would have thought about it a bit more. But I loved the idea that we had a fixed timeline, because what that meant is it crystallized your thinking, and it didn't allow you, because I think probably, I couldn't tell you the stats on IT or digital projects, but I think one of the major reasons projects don't get over the line is that people keep adding scope in all the time, and you keep adding scope, you add complexity, and you never get live. We had a great mindset, and that came from our CEO, Kate, downwards, is we had empowerment to kind of get on with the project, having the right support in our kind of steering committee and our board to give us the right support and guidance. But effectively, my product owner was empowered to make the decisions. It didn't involve committees of five different people or five different levels. We cracked on. If we needed help, we had a governance structure there to escalate to or ask for assistance. And it's all about empowerment for me. Give the product owner empowerment. Don't constrain yourself with small budget decisions. And with that flexibility, that allowed us to get over the line. I would definitely put it down to go for an MVP approach. Do not be scared of getting something out there. Now, we had a little advantage, I suppose, is what we had there wasn't great. Our whole business is not dependent on online. We're not a pure play business, we're a people business. The majority of our transactions happen in branch and will continue to happen in branch, to be honest with you. Our e-commerce is kind of as a shop window. It's tools for the trade. It's kind of a little enhancement of MKM. So we had flexibility to go for a big bang approach. We didn't have a multi-country deployment. We weren't 70% of our sales online. We could actually go for it in a way that you could build. We had the best of both worlds. We did a little bit of waterfall at the start. Then you're into agile sprints. You make your decisions, you test, and then you go big bang, switch the old one off, put the new one on. We didn't have to worry about double integrations, all of that kind of stuff. We made the decision. It was quite clean. But that came from the right decision-making and empowerment mindset and culture in MKM and our partners.
That makes sense. And I guess with a big commerce, you have the option of going down the headless route or using their own kind of framework.
Yeah.
Unlike at the time, commerce tools, if you were evaluating against that, like, what was the driver around the headless side? And I guess, you know, there's obviously a lot of noise in the market around pros and cons of headless. And I think there's always going to be overheads. But like, what was the driver behind the headless route?
Yeah, so I think it was looking at the best in breed mentality. And that's not saying, I think big commerce has got so much in the system that we don't use, and there's stuff been added to that platform since we've gone live. But I think we were fairly set that we wanted a separate digital experience platform like a Bloomreach, so that had kind of search and merch, all our CMS, all our kind of automated marketing, all within that system. But Bloomreach and BigCommerce are partners. You know, I think they've done work before. The API connectors are there. You know, so we kind of, I mean, I would never believe anybody that says to me that composable commerce is simply like just plug and play and you're away. It's all about the plumbing and wiring and the complexity of the business you're working with as well. We're quite a complex business with regards to our setup. You know, we've got 124 websites, 125 websites. It's like a website for each branch. So every branch has, you know, pricing for local markets, but that's what makes MKM successful. But we had to obviously spend a lot of time making sure the plumbing and wiring of all of these systems with our ERP, and that was one of the main things, that they all talk to each other and the data flows. And we feel we've got a really robust architecture with regards to that could allow us to swap if we wanted to. So let's say in the future we wanted to swap out and do something different, we could. Now, again, it's not just lift it out and put another one in within 3 days. I think you're always going to have to undo some of your plumbing and wiring if you're doing composable commerce. But it allows you to do that. You're not sucked into one provider that gives you everything, and you're stuck to that one roadmap. And there's pros and cons for both setups. And a monolithic approach is not wrong either, right? It all comes down to the business and what you want. You might just want one system and one supplier and it does your business. There's nothing wrong with that. And I would never can add, I would advocate if composable commerce allows, is in the mindset of your business and you need some of that complexity and flexibility in your business, it's a good thing. It certainly worked for us. But you could do pros and cons till the cows come home on both of these setups. But we believe it works for us and it was something new. You know, I've done monolithic stuff before. And every project you kind of learn and you build as you go through your careers. I think composable commerce for now, where it's at, the industry, I mean, the Mac Alliance in Amsterdam, the industry's massive on it. You see the partners, you see the relationships there. It's a movement. But yeah, I think it was to answer your original point, Paul, Beth is allowing you the flexibility to what you believe for your business is best in breed.
Elastic Path is on a mission to break through the barriers that prevent commerce leaders from delivering extraordinary shopping experiences. Both business and tech teams are able to innovate on their own terms, fully embrace composability, and in turn, never compromise on what's possible. Learn more at www.elasticpath.com.
Yeah, absolutely. I think your business is probably better suited to composable than some of the other businesses we've had on the podcast, where you've obviously got complexity around pricing and the branches and like different experiences, etc.
Yes.
And I guess that kind of takes me on to my next question. So we've mentioned Bloomreach a few times and you've talked about that being an important part of the stack. Can you just talk us through like the impact of their DXP to your kind of operational teams and how they've been able to like better merchandise and personalize and...
Yeah. So I think I would say we're not using it to its full potential yet. Yeah. We've spent, you know, we got live, we've been stabilizing, we've been focusing on some key roadmap items and some hygiene on our site. But we've had some really good sessions with Bloomreach recently where we've kind of walked through our strategy and what we want. And there's a bunch of actions agreed that we need to kind of undertake before we really, really kind of sweat the asset that we've got. That we feel we've really got the fundamentals there for Bloomreach to allow what we want to do, and it'll be personalizing it in a way that allows you to personalize based on the type of person that logs into your website. It could be a retail customer, it could be a large building company, it could be a kind of 4 or 5 man band that you want certain products and certain experiences on the site. We've still got a lot of work to do on that we believe we've got the fundamentals in place and the foundations in place. And that was our main drive over year one, was to make sure we get our data layer, get everything kind of geared up, and then start to switch on the different components. But we're already using Bloomreach to personalize a lot of our SMSs. A lot of our email marketing approach is based on, you know, the customer type, the things that they buy and so on. So we're already using it, but there's a lot more we can use Bloomreach for that we've not used it for yet.
Good. A kind of related question around CRM, because it's obviously CRM is a big thing in B2B and account management, whether it's about sales teams managing pipelines or customers being able to raise multiple quotes because they've got different projects, especially in the building trade. How do you handle CRM? Like what system, you know, is it a mature setup? Are you just starting? What systems do you use? How are they connected?
Yeah, so I think you could argue I would just start. We've not justified the need at this point that we need a separate CRM full technology stack at the moment. We've got enough data in our ERP and the way that's set up, the way we bring that data out, our ERP and how we analyze that internally gives us all our customer data. And actually, we're starting to use a bit of Bloomreach, you could argue, for a bit of that as well. But we're still probably early doors and still maturing through that process, but we feel we've got enough for now. It might be something that we look at in the future as we kind of mature digitally as a business. But we basically rely a lot on our ERP customer data, how that's brought into our own internal systems that we've got for CRM. And that kind of mixed in with Bloomreach intelligence, it kind of gives us what we need just now.
Are you using any of BigCommerce's like quote engine, because that's something that's one of their big selling points in the SaaS space of B2B, or is it just not a core part of your model?
We've not used that functionality yet, but there's various things we're looking at on our site to do with kind of quotes and templates. All of that stuff's on our roadmap. I mean, we've got a roadmap that's, you know, it's we freelance of this room of ideas, but, you know, I would still say we're early doors in the maturity of a new system. You know, we were the first in the world to put in that combination, and we've settled down. I'm not going to go into revenue figures, but, you know, the revenue going through the website has kind of doubled, tripled since we've kind of gone live. And we continue to see growth, but there's so much more that we can probably do on the site. But it's a journey, and you've got to kind of balance that with the rest of your business priorities as well. You know, we're not a pure play business.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. There's only so much you can do, right? And that prioritization is a big skill set in robots. But so that brings us on nice, actually, because we talked about the technology stack around BigCommerce and Bloomreach and why you got to that point. Let's talk about the project piece, because this is a bit, with my exceptionally dull project and process focused mindset, I love to hear about how people approach it, what issues they've had, you know, what they've learned during it. So I'd love to know, because you were going from a legacy stack into a new like composable setup with a new e-commerce engine and a new DXP. What were some of the key technical challenges that you and the team faced making that transition? Well, anything to do around, like, did you have to pivot resourcing or internal models?
Yeah, so no, it's a great question. So I think we went into this with our system integrator and our partners with a very clear strategy that we would use our SI to help us build the solution and get live. But while we were doing that, we were going to start bringing in our own developers as well in our own time. And we did that slowly. We didn't want to just turn up all of a sudden you've got six of your own developers and you throw them over in the middle of a project. I don't think that's the right way of doing it. You pick an SI because you trust them and that they can pull things together for you. So we went into that with a really open relationship with regards to, they also helped us interview one or two devs as we brought them in through the door. So there was a flexibility on the people, so it wasn't a threat to either party. All of a sudden, you just turned up with your own devs and you didn't tell them about it. We actually went into that with that kind of open thinking. We did that. I would definitely encourage people to do a discovery phase. You know, there's not, again, now I come from, you know, I think we all do, if we were kind of working in technology 30 years ago, you know, Agile's existed for over that amount of time, but only, I would say, in the last 10, 15 years of kind of companies started to move more towards that. But again, there's nothing wrong with a waterfall process either if it's used for the right type of thing. So I've done some Agile transformation. I'm not an Agile evangelist, certainly not. It's about picking the right kind of methods and frameworks for what works for you. So I would definitely encourage people to really nail down, once you've kind of started to agree, as you agree your contracts, is really work through the requirements and flush everything down. So what everybody said on paper they can do is use a month or two to do a bit of a discovery piece, proof of concept. The big thing we wanted to prove was, could these systems deal with the pricing complexity we have as a business? Yeah. So every branch can have their own pricing. Customers within that branch can have different pricing as well. You know, a hammer that costs £10 in Kirkcaldy might be £9.58 in Hull. It all kind of gives the business the flexibility to have products and pricing for the local market. And that's what makes MKM different, disruptive and successful. So we wanted to test that out to make sure that our ERP could talk to the systems we were looking at, BigCommerce coming through Vue Storefront and Bloomreach. So we did some mini proof of concepts through the 8 weeks, and we basically did lots of workshops to really have conversations about your requirements and work them through. And then at the end of that phase, you built confidence that you could do it. Then the approach was 2 week sprints, and basically we had a say on what we also were influenced, or we could influence what we worked on, but you would take the lead from your SI or your partner. So we kind of went through, you know, I can't even remember how many sprints now, 13, 14 sprints and then you go into integration test phase, then you moved into, then you're more into the waterfall world now. You've kind of done all your agile building, and then you move into an end-to-end integration and then an end-to-end UAT, making sure that business are involved and stuff. So we did all of that. We did hit a challenge midway through the project in February. I think we had some optimistic timelines of trying to go live and earlier than August, but our internal at MKM, August was the date that was not worst case. It was actually a marriage date that we thought it would take. There was some optimistic views that we could go earlier than that. We did aim for it, but we didn't do it. And to be fair, our SI, probably February time, I think, basically acknowledged there was an issue with the performance of the back end. The way maybe some of it had been built and architected wasn't quite right. But they put their hands up. They worked with us. We did some refactoring. We worked through it. You could have left it, and we could have probably got live, but I think we would have paid the price. Yeah. And they were brilliant enough to kind of say, right, this isn't right. We're going to have to work on this and refactor. So we probably spent another 4 to 8 weeks reworking a bunch of stuff. But because we had built up that collaborative relationship, there wasn't any shouting or screaming or accusations or anything like that. It was, right, how do we solve it? How do we work together? And that's what this project allowed the teams to do. We had plenty of FaceTime, lots of calls. And I mean, there was some humbling stuff on this project. Some of these guys and girls were working in Ukraine. The Ukraine crisis kicked off. We dealt with Russia invading Ukraine during the project. You're dealing with people. And it was like, you're trying to make, these guys are wanting to work, and you're like, wow. And like, never did we ever say timelines or anything. We would have, whatever was happening, people were far more important than what we were doing as a project. But the partners dealt with the people brilliantly, and the people who worked on the project worked through a lot of stuff as well, moved different locations, some of our partners helped people out. So there was certainly outside things that influenced the project, but I was so impressed with the ethics of the companies that we worked with as well. And that for me was far more important than anything else. And relationships were built. It all sounds, you know, all rosy. It was hard. It was a hard project. But the relationships and trust was there. So to answer your question, James, I think a mixture of real good due diligence at the start, and still we found something wrong in the middle, because you usually always do. It was going really well. I was almost waiting for something to go wrong. It was too perfect for a technology project. And we faced the challenge and we fixed it. Everybody put their hands up and they collaboratively worked with each other. And that's the big thing for me.
Great. And I guess you've talked about kind of working with the SI and adopting Agile and, you know, working in sprints. Obviously, your background is program management. And then you've got kind of, you've got multiple vendors here. You've got the back office side, the integrations between the systems. Like, how did you kind of go about managing this project internally? And then what other advice would you have for kind of of the, like, people that are approaching a large like transformation project?
So I think the big thing for me is to make sure your governance is clear. Roles and responsibilities are clear. You invest a lot of time at that at the start. You never go back to that document to check it. If you have to go back to the document to check people's roles and responsibilities, you've probably got a problem. Yeah, it's like going back to contracts. Once a contract's signed and done, you should never have to go back. If you're pulling out a contract to look at stuff, you've got a problem. Yeah. I don't remember that once in the project. But it was all about getting roles and responsibilities agreed across the team and then the support levels of the project. So we had senior stakeholder regular calls across Bloomreach, Big Commerce, View Storefront, Brave Bison, and us. We had a regular, I think, if we needed it, it was weekly. If it was bi-weekly, and then you'd maybe have a month of it. It was all short and sweet. It wasn't. And if we didn't need it, we didn't do it. Yeah. But what we had is we had a formal place to discuss the key issues and risks, and senior stakeholders from these organizations in these calls to help unblock the teams. We also had integrated kind of Slack channel for the team members and for senior stakeholders, so we could all communicate through Slack if we needed to. So having one platform, you can all actually communicate with each other instead of waiting for a meeting or people sending 40 million emails to each other. Actually cutting through having some comms channel for people to talk on. So I think that cut through a lot of stuff for us. So roles and responsibilities, communication, Have governance there, but don't make it complicated, don't make it bureaucratic. Just have enough there to support the team. It sounds basic when I talk it out, but some people maybe forget that stuff. So I think good old, it's even old fashioned, is just have a good structure in place. If you've got a structure in place, you can break that structure if you want, but at least you're breaking a process and a structure rather than making it up as you go.
Great. And then I guess this is quite a broad question, particularly with all those kind of variables I mentioned a second ago. But what were like your biggest learnings? Like if you were starting the same project again tomorrow, what would you do differently?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think, like anything, because you've got a burning platform, you have to go at pace, right? If I had the perfect setup and I had more time, I probably would have invested more time in product data, getting your product data right. Yeah, make sure you've got the right technology for that. I would also invest the time. I'm a believer that it's like outsourcing, insourcing, using UK teams, offshore teams, doing things in-house. There's pros and cons to every which way you do it. I was a firm believer that as MKM, we're a people business, that we had ownership of some key roles and that we had a vision that we would build our own in-house team eventually, like in full. So I've got my first, I've kind of got my own development team now. But we also have partners that we can flex up with as well. So I think for me, that's the perfect model for us. I'm not saying everybody else has to do that. Building your own teams brings the challenges. If people leave, you've got to recruit and so on. So there's, it doesn't matter which way you do it, there's always challenges. What would I do differently? If I had more time, I maybe would have built some more of my own internal devs as well and done it purely hybrid all the way through. But I didn't have that luxury. We didn't have the luxury of getting a product data absolutely sound. And if I had that, I would have done that first, then I would have re-platformed. But it didn't hold us back. You know, we had the flexibility. We've added products since we've gone live. And we've enriched product data since we've gone live. So it's there's no disasters here. I think the other thing is really pay close attention to SEO and moving from one platform to another. We made a few... I think we made a few errors in approaches across our teams on our SEO, but we recovered it. But we didn't get the migration right, so it probably should have been a bit more attention to that. But again, it wasn't dramatic for us based on the spend on the website and the dependency of a website for our business. Yeah. Also look at how Google Core Web Vitals interrogates your site and how it tells you how you're doing. Yeah. Really pay attention to that. And a lot of that you can't figure out until you've gone live. And we've been looking at that in quite a big way. But I would just look at SEO, look at Google Web Vitals, look at the surrounding things that help your projects. Not that we weren't looking at them, but I don't think we had the capacity and the focus to really, really look at these areas. We were very focused on getting the technology solution live on time because it's a burning platform. There's not many things I could change or make different decisions on in the time that we had. But having the time to focus you, I think, really helped us as well. I think if we hadn't had a burning platform, you could spend 2 years doing this stuff and not go live. So there's no perfection. But learning's definitely on SEO for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting that whole MVP thing really helps. I've done this with so many clients and their projects where they just, you know, that they're going to end up taking too long to get live because everyone wants everything in scope, and having to get people at the senior level to define what MVP is, what it means to the business operationally and customer facing wise. It helps massively because you've got that, as you said, nothing's perfect, right? But then at least you've got criteria to come back to and say, does that meet the criteria for MVP? Yes, no, great. Okay, right. We've got our sensible decision. Yeah. I've got one last question, actually.
No, I was going to say one last thing. It's what we did well, and it's what other businesses, I'm almost kind of stating the obvious here, but you have to build a good collaborative effort over your business, and especially if you've got a digital team in an IT organization. A lot of IT organizations, they own the ERP. They understand the integration. They've got great people. And that's what we did, is we engaged the IT team right from the start that were involved. That wasn't an afterthought. Oh, by the way, we need to do integration to the ERP 6 months into the project. I've heard projects doing that before. Engage your stakeholders right from the start, finance, commercial, IT, procurement. Anybody that works with that system is get stakeholders involved at the right time, but as early as possible. And that's what we did, because we're a really good people business, and we're a good lean setup that allows that to happen. We've not got layers and layers of bureaucracy. We just cut through stuff and get it done.
Yeah, that's so important. And the added benefit of that is you can establish red lines very early on in terms of what you can and cannot do from a finance point of view. We've had, me and Paul had this in other projects where it's, well, actually, you know, is it fixed, your payment provider? Is there flexibility to change? Are there red lines that the e-commerce project has to work within, so that it doesn't end up presenting something that another stake will then just bat it away?
Yeah. And we did that. Finance were involved from the start. We talked about the payment provider on their site, fraud check and all of that. We nailed a lot of that at the start of the project and the strategy and approach.
Yeah, excellent. I got one question. Coming back to the, because you said you're building an internal dev function. You led more heavily at the start on the agency. And I find this a bit fascinating, because lots of businesses go down this route. Some want to build out only front end. Others want to take whole responsibility to everything. And hybrid setups bring additional challenges around release management, because you've got two different teams managing code branches. I'd love to know, how have you approached it? Is your dev team focused purely on like view the DXP in the front end piece, or are you also taking ownership of like integrations? What was the rationale then? What was your desire to own the whole thing in house rather than having an agency to do it?
Yeah, so I think because of the composable commerce setup, the big important thing for us is the plumbing and wiring. And the plumbing and wiring sit in a kind of middle layer back end. So who can all the systems together, the transactional data? I think it's absolutely key that we as MKM understand how that works, because we work really closely with our IT team, and all the ERP data that feeds that back end and middle layer is very, very well understood by our IT department as well. So it doesn't make much sense to have an agency for us to do that. I think, not that you've asked me this question, what would I prioritize? Would I take the back end full stack over the front end? I would rather understand the real nuts and bolts, the back end and how that communicates. But the front end's super important for me as well. So, because the front end and the UX experience, that has been driven by us. That was our staff. You know, I've got a lead UX and the UX UI resource in my team. The look and feel of that website is ours. It's MKM's branding. It's our look and feel. We drove a lot of that. So it kind of makes no sense for me to separate them all and just say I want back end, front end or not. So we've decided that we'll split our dev team. The way you work, I suppose we've got full stack devs, so a lot of full stack devs, a lot of them are back end focused, but they can do front end. So we've got resources that can do a bit of both, but maybe more experienced in the back end. And we've got kind of a couple of front end resources as well that are focused on the front end. And we've got lead UX and everything in house as well. So we didn't see a need for separating it. We want to have an understanding of it all, but we've got an agency that works with us that have done both these bits as well. So if we wanted to flex up front end or the back end, or what, we've got that skill set with that partner and SI as well. We've now moved, we've got full, all the CI/CD pipeline, all our release processes, that's all MKM now. But if somebody, we would have a partner that can, we've got the flexibility that a partner could work with in that environment now. That we've now got ownership of all of that.
Interesting, thanks. That's all the key questions you want to answer. Really interesting to hear that. I love the stories of when people decide to bring it in-house and how they manage their development teams. Absolutely. Craig, really appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast. Really enjoyed talking to you today. And also, good luck with everything. Good luck with the ongoing roadmap releasing. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode as well. Keep your ear open for the next episode. We drop one every week. And don't forget to give us that rating before you go. Thanks, everybody. Until next time. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gird, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.